Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Today's Monday. It's the 16th of October. It's 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. And we begin this day every Monday with none other than John Bailey. John Bailey is a publisher and the editor of the White Plains Citizenet Reporter. You could find him online at WPCNR.com, so White Plains Citizenet Reporter.com. And welcome, John. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, world. John Bailey here in White Plains, New York, USA. I'm okay, just dealing with some of the usual emergencies that crop up with this old house I have. So it's just unbelievable. Everything starts going one after the other. It's sort of like being human. You get to be our age, everything starts going one by one.
That's very,
very
true.
Depressing to think of us as like a house, but I mean, no maintenance means you will deteriorate.
Exactly, which is so relevant because a lot of people I find have somehow they must feel their invincibility for some reason, or they're reluctant to get their inoculations because they feel invincible. And isn't it too late when you get sick and infected at that point? So, you know, I don't understand.
It does not feel good. Yes, since I
good.
Contracted it a couple of weeks ago, I got the and that knocked it right out. And but now every time I sort of get a sniffle or a stuffy nose, I'm worried about it.
Yeah,
you know, you can't keep giving yourself an antigen test every time you get the sniffles.
No, that's for sure. That's for sure. But sniffles doesn't necessarily
but that's what
mean
happens,
you've got COVID.
It's out there. And
well, you know,
if you're not fully vaccinated, as I was, I was fully vaccinated. And I still, but it was very unserious. I had a fever for a day. And then that went out after the Trump medication I got.
Uh-huh.
That's right. And so the problem is nobody really knows that this medicine that they give it to you and they will only give it to you within 5 days of your being tested positive, you know. And well, people don't know this. People don't know it. At no time over the last 3 years have we ever been told flat out in a communication by the CDC that you can only get this medicine at the immediate outset of the disease within 5 days. Nobody ever wrote that on the CDC. They didn't. And so therefore, I think what they did was they wanted to preserve it. I don't think you've got enough of it.
Probably not. That's probably the rationale for it. They don't want to have the antidote or create more of an antidote availability, and that becomes a problem. It's, you know, sometimes we think, in such a magnanimous society as we live in here in the United States, that everything is affordable, but it's not. And there's always a balance with regard to the cost of all these things. And sometimes people are reluctant to do the best that they can to figure out what's what. You know, you could still get those tests that you could do at home to see if you really are infected or not. And you get the sniffles and you're not sure. And you can get tested also if you don't want to do the test at home. There are places you can still get tested. And a lot of it is covered by medical expenses and insurances. But then I guess a lot of people who don't have those insurances just figure everything is okay. And they don't test because they don't want to know.
This is why the cases are up in Westchester County, where we live.
Yeah, I think
so. Because people don't want to make tests positive, but they'll just say, well, it's not too serious, but I have to go to work. I can't say, you know, my kid can't stay home. I have to go to work.
Right.
I mean, there are all sorts of reasons why people just make themselves vulnerable because they're personal decisions.
Yeah, but
no school district requires you to be vaccinated, for God's sake, against COVID. That's ridiculous.
Well,
the youth are more vulnerable because
the schools should be the ones that would be the place that would make logical sense. You inoculate the kids in the school. And this way, all the kids are inoculated, and that should be a government expense because the individuals who don't inoculate the kids probably can't afford to. And there's a lot of poverty in the county. You know, not everyone is so well off, and that's become evident.
Yeah, and the pharmacies, people go to the pharmacies, and in theory, you aren't supposed to pay at, I think, CVS
and
a few of those.
Yeah.
But it depends on how honest the pharmacy people are.
I didn't know that. I know that when I went to Walgreens, they gave me the inoculation.
Yeah.
They didn't charge for it, maybe because I have insurance. I don't know. But whatever the case is, they said that there is no charge for RSV or for the or for COVID.
Yes, that's great.
Yeah. So,
but these are also things that we don't know. It's not made clear. Nobody spends their lifetime every day on the county website, for example, the county health department website, and nobody goes to them on a regular basis, except we journalists looking for the facts.
Yeah, but that's the problem. There is a disconnect, and a lot of people have other issues, and people are not reading as much as they used to. I don't know what's happened or what's caused that, but there's less and less reading out there. People are not reading a print paper quite a bit because they can either get it for free or they have a subscription online, depending on where you want to visit and depending on the subject matters that are covered. And the cost of newspapers has gotten prohibitive for a lot of people.
Yeah,
we're not
in three
a good
bucks
place.
No, we are not. It used to be regular papers depended on advertising and not subscriptions because they were the king of the hill. But in the internet era, journalism has been killed.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's been killed.
And there are a lot of people.
It's dying a very long, slow death. Yeah.
A lot of people online claim to be reporters, but they're not. They're opinionators. They espouse things that they cannot validate, and they do not validate in their writing. So they just want – I don't know what they want, but they want to play the game that they are reporters, which they're not. And it's not so much that you need to have the credentials of being a reporter so much – but you need to be able to validate what you say. And we don't have that sort of ethical standard anymore. Maybe it's because of my age. I remember when that was important. And we don't have that today. It's very, very strange.
No. Right. And nowadays, you have to pay for the online editions of The Washington Post and the New York Times and various others, and really
afford
to do that.
For some people, it's not affordable. a lot of people can't afford.
That's right. Absolutely, Fezzy. I mean, it's
a
disservice.
If you subscribe to the New York Times, that's not cheap. The Wall Street Journal, not cheap. The Washington Post, not cheap. There's some little papers out in Long Island. They've got a good name out there, but they're local. And
Newsday,
absolutely
I think.
Nothing.
And well, Newsday, you never could read it because you didn't know where the sections were. It was one of the great, great faults of that paper. But be that as it may, what is really happening is everybody watches Fox News, and they have one commentator after another giving opinions on what should be done and what is going to happen. And you know what? They don't know.
Well, that's what they call pontification. They don't validate their opinions, but people believe them because I guess they sound credible, and one would expect that Fox News will report what is credible and what can be validated. But that's the problem. There's a reluctance.
Well, we know they don't.
But not everybody does. That's the point. Yeah. The point is that while there may be many that view their reporting as invalid, there are many people who view their reporting as valid. And they can't seem to differentiate, nor do they care, that it is opinion rather than fact. And some people don't know the difference. And some people have the propensity to take opinion as fact without proof because they don't know what it means to do reporting the right way. That's it. I don't know. I don't know how to fix that. It wasn't like that 10 years ago.
No.
It wasn't like that 10 years ago or 20. It was like unheard of. Your opinion was designated as an opinion rather than a whole network like news of, was it Channel 5 in the New York area where they just, they talk. It's all opinion. Fox News, unbelievable. And people believe it.
Right.
Because it's politics. We become politicized and without validation of why we believe one thing or another. I don't get it.
Right.
When do we get so dumbed down?
Yes. Well, you know, a very good feature that Fox News should really explore. What would Trump do if he became president with the present situations that we face today? What would Trump do? I have never seen them do something like that. Not that I watch them a lot. But nobody does.
I don't watch them at all. Yeah. But the point is that nobody wants to challenge Fox News. And even the liberal-minded who don't agree with Fox News, they probably don't watch Fox News, or they're just disinterested, or they're afraid of the backlash because so many people do believe in what's being said at Fox News. So I don't know how to balance this out, but the problem is that we no longer have balance in our reporting. We only have opinions in many cases, and that has undermined the credibility of media completely. Yeah, that's a problem.
Absolutely. And the focusing on one huge story by the networks of all kinds at the expense of more local stuff that is just as important to you as a person who lives in the Westchester area, for example, it really hurts us. It hurts us because we do not know what is really happening in our own backyard. We know where traffic accidents are and bad crashes that kill people, but that's about the extent of local printed news. And also, the local printed weeklies, which do a reasonable job, but these stories are usually not too earth-shaking.
Well, that's the problem.
And they're supported by real estate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but they're supported by real estate, so you never really realize how bad the housing market is right now, because that hurts their advertisers.
Right.
Never seen a story on local real estate in weeklies, or let alone Westchester Magazine, you know, that puts up glowing reports. You know, I mean, I'm just pointing out that that's what they do. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the reality. Look, when you look at our local paper here, they don't write about Westchester County. They make their money off of automobile ads. That's how they make their money. They're losing a fortune of money.
Right.
Readership is down to the ground. They don't even have 1,000 subscribers to print paper. They don't have that, and it's insanity. And yet, the reason that people don't read the local paper here in Westchester County is because they don't talk about the communities within Westchester County. It's important what goes on in Mount Vernon. It's important what goes on in White Plains. It's important what goes on in Yonkers and in Dobbs Ferry and so many other places, in New Rochelle. Wherever you look, each one of these communities matter. But when the local paper in print that used to be the number one news outlet has been eviscerated by the lack of reporting on community. What are they, out of their mind?
Yeah, because the reporters cost money. You have to pay them. Yeah.
Well, that's their problem.
That's good.
You're a
because...
one-man show. I'm a one-man show.
Yeah.
How come you can do what
right.
you do, and I can do what I do on a one-man show with no staff, no nothing, and yet you do the reporting? Hey, that's a new reality.
Yeah.
If you can't afford to have 20 reporters, then you can't. Then just do the job and do the job right for what you can do.
Exactly. You need reporters in the major towns and cities. You need one each for each of the cities, and you need to divide about there are 36 other towns and villages other than the cities.
Right.
So what do? You give them, I think you can find enough stories to keep one reporter busy for at least 3 towns that are geographically centered. So that would be, you'd have 12 more reporters you need.
Yeah, but you don't need that if the counties and the communities, they all have leadership. So they may have a mayor, they may have somebody else that's in charge, however they define them in government. Hey, I don't know about you, but in Bronxville, for example, Mayor Marvin, she writes a column every week. Every week. Do you know what that means?
Actually, a mayor who does some work. That's really fantastic.
She does the work. You can't find that
that's
in other
right.
communities. You know, look.
No, you can't.
I happen to love Yonkers, but I'm sorry, their press office stinks. And you know what? When you want to reach out to the police department, they don't respond. They don't tell you what goes on. They don't send out press notices. Why not? What are they afraid of? Because they're not doing a good enough job? Is that the problem? Are they not arresting enough people? What the hell are they doing? They're hiding behind bullshit. And you know what? And that's where it's wrong. And unfortunately, the public has no control over what these idiots do because they don't tell them what they do. There's no police blotter anymore. None. I even wrote an editorial about that. What's wrong with what happened to the police blotter? Why don't we have one? What are they afraid of?
Yes, because communities want to cover up crime. That's what they're going to do.
Yeah, that's exactly right. hey, how come we don't have a story about all the theft that goes on in the Walgreens and all the other type of places where there's medicine? They now have plastic plexiglass to cover every item in a store because people are breaking in and stealing. Unbelievable. They're just stealing, and it's okay. Hey, you got videotapes. Why don't you have coverage? If people are stealing, so why don't you have the video? Why don't you know who's who? If you started arresting people, maybe we would put an end to this bullshit. And you know what? The cost.
Right. Either that, or let in customers one at a time.
Yeah.
And have lines outside your stores. And you know who goes in your store to see if any sales were made. I mean, technology has the ability to do this, but nobody wants to spend the money.
Well,
they'd rather take the loss.
They're not taking the loss because they're raising prices in order to compensate for the losses that they suffer because of people stealing and the cost of putting up these plexiglass units and locking everything up, and they need staff to open it up when somebody legitimately wants to buy something. It goes on and on and on. And do you think you're not paying more for this sort of service? You pay for it.
Well, we certainly are paying more. We are paying more. I mean, last week in another one of those up again, down again, up again reports the government seems to issue every week, 3.7% inflation from a year ago. You know, that's the raise. Now, what bothers me is that nobody talks about why this is. Why? Because the companies are raising prices.
Correct. That's right.
They are trying to improve their profit at the public expense, and nobody even whispers price controls. Nobody whispers that. And it has to be looked at, and the prices have to be applied for in order to raise them. But nobody even touches that third rail in politics. You know,
look, when
you
look at crime, crime is indicative of the financial capacity of people to earn a living. And it's the poor, not that they're at fault.
Good point.
They're not employed. They're not employed. There are no jobs for them. We should be planning on how to employ these people so they have self-respect and they earn a living. And they can afford to buy food, and they can afford to buy shelter, which means that they need to be able to afford to rent an apartment or whatever. And this is what needs to be done. And our society is not looking at it as if, that's their problem. It's not our problem. It is a
free enterprise.
Problem. Exactly.
Free enterprise. But what people don't realize is free enterprise is not free. It costs a lot of money. And what is the policy of corporations now? To merge, to conglomerate, to control the market, and and everybody makes more money because of the becoming conglomerates. And you even see that in the media, right? WVOX was taken over by a company from the West Coast, and they're still dead. They're still not back on the air, and they are probably going to become another sports radio outlet, which is what the history of the company that purchases these AM stations does. And therefore, 50 years of VOX has gone, thrown out, because somebody just wanted it, and the owners wanted to make a pile of money by selling the station.
Hey, the owners could have made more money if they would have done the right thing all the years that they were operating, but they didn't because they did it on a penny. Yeah. Nobody that worked there, and even I had a show there, they didn't pay anybody. It was all for free. It was all for free. It was all good stuff. It wasn't that idiots going there. That's the point.
Right.
They had exceptionally good people, of which I was one, on the show, and the point is it worked. And for a full hour, they got a full hour from me and a guy by the name of Richard Narog, who was in the teaching profession in Yonkers, and we spoke about politics and everything else that mattered from a local perspective, and it was about Yonkers. The point is there were other shows like that. Instead of fluff bullshit that they ran because they wanted to fill it up with time. And then they ended up selling a lot of the time slots, I think, for Jamaican music, which is not the problem. But the point is they were subsidizing everything else by charging for that service that was brought in. But they could have done a better job. It was the guy who owned it, O'Shaughnessy, did a very poor job in managing it, and that was his fault. And that's why the whole thing failed, because he was a failure.
Yes,
he was
if it was profitable, they would never have sold it.
Exactly. And you know what? Instead of having a much stronger antenna, which he could have had, he didn't give a shit that he was broadcasting over the river, and it went all the way out to Long Island, except that the people who were interested in what was being discussed on WVOX were here in Westchester County. But we had a week
that
signal.
Was the story for years. I mean, I remember my mother listening to me when I was on VOX many years ago. And that was fascinating to me, that station in New Rochelle carried across into Long Island, but never had Long Island interests in mind when they programmed.
Correct. And then what about the people in Westchester County who couldn't get the signal? We couldn't get the signal quite often, because in Yonkers.
Yes. Right. I mean, it was a daylight station. Daylight station, that was why. They had to cut back their power It was a daylight station. They could only really broadcast at full power as when the sun came up.
Well, whatever the case is, they could have had repeaters in different communities that would pick up the station, even if it was delayed 15 minutes.
Yeah, and they used to have a news operation, which they dropped because it was too expensive.
Yes.
And I don't know when they dropped that, but that was beginning of the end, when they went to the national news networks like Fox,
Because what's the point? Why would anyone in their right mind go to Fox? If they want Fox, they could have gone to Fox. They want to go to CBS, they could go to CBS.
Right.
They don't need to go to WVOX
to
hear the same bullshit.
Exactly. Right.
And besides, we weren't interested.
New York radio
is
dead. Yeah.
Yeah.
New York radio is dead. It's dying. It still makes money because of...
Hold on a second, John. I didn't realize it's already 28 minutes after the hour. So let me just pick up the caller. It's probably Michael Edelman. I'm not sure, but we'll find out. Bear with me a second.
Okay.
Good morning.
Fine.
Thanks for calling.
Michael Edelman.
Good morning, Michael.
It is. Hello,
okay,
guys.
Well, bear with me a moment. We're going to be finishing with John.
Oh, welcome back.
Thank you. Well, John, as always,
yes,
a pleasure.
At least somebody called in on time.
Well, he's always called on time. So he really knows what to do.
reliable.
Thank you very much. And for the people who want to listen to John Bailey, and I can't imagine why they wouldn't, WPCNR.com is the place to go. White Plains Citizenet Reporter. Thanks again, John. We'll speak to you next week.
Yes, when
stay
the internet is cooperating.
Absolutely.
Okay, so long for now.
Bye.
Until next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. Okay, so how are you, Michael? What a pleasure to
speak
to you.
I'm doing good. How about you?
Thank God.
Nice,
really, I've got no complaints.
We got a nice break in the weather. We finally got rid of the hot summer humidity. We're in the 60s
Thank
today.
Goodness. Absolutely. It's thank goodness it's going on. Well, what's happening climate-wise? Is Trump resurging, or is he losing out somehow? Like Nikki Haley, I was surprised she was able to outflank DeSantis. That was huge, and
which
a
poll?
Woman, no less.
Which poll has he?
It was, you know, to be honest, I don't have it in front of me, but she evidently has moved ahead of DeSantis in people's interest for her to run for office.
Well, you know, Hezzy, I monitor Real Clear Politics. That's a
yes.
That's a website that has all the polling.
Uh-huh.
I don't know which poll you're referring to, but every poll I see, DeSantis doesn't make a difference. DeSantis is beating her, but Trump's got a 40-point lead. So what's the point? He's going to be the nominee.
True.
He is going to be the nominee.
Yeah.
And that's fine because he's got to lose. If he loses again, we'll finally be rid of him.
Mm-hmm. But is it conceivable that we've gotten much more polarized by him after he left office, after he lost the election? And
yeah.
And so that people want him back. There are many people who want him back. So
yeah.
Is there going to be so if he will be the Republican candidate, you know, at the end of the day, he'll be the only one standing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Does Biden have the capacity to outflank him, even though he did it the first time? I don't know anymore.
Well, that's the $60,000 question, isn't it? Because
two polls
were released yesterday, one from Pennsylvania and one from Michigan. And, you know, those are two swing states that you have to have to win the presidency. And Biden was losing to Trump by 6 points or 8 points in both those polls.
Yeah.
The problem, I think, for Biden is that he is perceived to be too old. Whether or not he is a whole other issue. But I believe voters believe that he's just too old. At 80, it'll be 82. If he runs and elected, when he talks, he's not animated. Trump is. He understands policy. He knows what he's talking about. If you listen to him, I watched the 60-minute interview. If you haven't seen it, pull it up on your TV last night.
Right.
He was excellent. He was excellent on policy. Excellent. But people don't perceive their lives getting any better, even though the data says it is. So people, when they go to the store.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, do you think, are we getting enough data with regard to his accomplishments, or is that where it's failing? It's the press notices.
When you say we, the messaging isn't very good.
Well, that's what I'm concerned about.
Yeah, no, messaging's not very good, and a lot of people are watching Fox, and Fox portrays him as senile.
Yes.
And so 1% of the people in the Republican Party think he's not up to the job. Donald Trump will be facing 91 felony counts between now and election, and what I'm hoping is that as he goes to trial, the evidence that the prosecutor puts in is you know, broadcast to the American public, not directly, but by press coverage, and people understand that the guy was using the presidency for self-enrichment.
Mm-hmm.
There's a book out called The Big Cheat.
System.
Yeah, more than that, though. He had his son-in-law working out of the White House who got $2 billion, from the Saudi fund.
Right.
Okay, so he's not an investment manager. but they gave it to him because he was getting paid for being the Saudis' eyes and ears in the White House.
Right.
His daughter got 6 Chinese patents to sell her clothing line while Trump was negotiating with Xi.
Yeah.
In China.
Yep.
So Donald Trump is unfit for office. Every single person that's worked with him, you know, from Tillerson to Kelly to McMaster to Milley, understands the guy is uneducated, doesn't care about what he's being told, and is only there to make money. That's it.
Yeah. Well, like father, like son, right? So he's the son, and he's learned it all from good old dad, who showed him how to connive and twist and lie and be deceitful, and that's how he made money. And,
that's right.
And he was allowed to get away with it for a long time, and he still gets away with it. Is there an ability, unless he gets vanquished in the upcoming election for president when he's running again, is it conceivable that there are enough people on the who would vote for Biden over Trump? Or is that really the big question? Because I don't know.
Well, that's the question. The problem now is the polling you're seeing now is irrelevant. It's just irrelevant because we have, you know, well over a year until the election.
Right.
And so there are all kinds of factors that will play into whether people vote for Biden or vote for Trump. And we just have to let it play out. I mean, if the election were held today, Trump would have a very good chance of winning.
I would think so,
polls are accurate. If those polls are accurate. Now, I don't want to live in a country that has Donald Trump because it's very similar to what's going on in some European countries. Orban is a strong man. The Polish people just had an election which the center and center right parties took back their democracy from an autocrat. So do the people in the United States understand that democracy is on the line? That's the question.
Do they want to lose the democracy
or do they want to retain the democracy?
I don't know. I think democracy is too sloppy for America, evidently. I don't know how we waned. We moved. I remember the 60s and 70s. It wasn't like it is today. But is that part of the odor that we smell from Trump? Did he change the demeanor of the nation?
Absolutely.
I think so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He has normalized his behavior because those people that follow him really don't care what he does. They think he's an instrument of God. They think he's an instrument of God, and therefore he has he's a sinner, but what he stands for is more important than preserving the United States of America democracy.
When did we lose sight of who we are as a nation? I mean, I never held any animosity. I felt it was like a given. America was one nation, and now it's been divided into sectionalism all over the place. It's amazing.
Yeah, but you have to understand what's going on. You really do. And what's going on is that for years, Fox News and other networks that are far right, like OAN and Newsmax, have been feeding a large portion of middle America with nonsense, conspiracy nonsense. And lacking the critical thinking skills necessary to distinguish nuance and to distinguish fact from fiction, they have swallowed hook, line, and sinker whatever Sean Hannity, Jeanine Pirro, or any of the other Fox hosts, Tucker Carlson, who's no longer there, tell them. And when that when you have that, you've got a propaganda news outlet masquerading as news. And it's not. It's an arm of right-wing propaganda. And all their interest is in electing a conservative, ultra-right president. And if that president has to be an autocrat, so be it. They don't look down the road and say, well, what happens when you have an autocracy? And Trump has said he, you know, if he's elected again, he's going to go after the media. He's going to stop them. He's going to punish them if they say stuff he doesn't like. He's going to be retribution against people who have not supported him. I mean, that's a third world nation. That's not what the United States is about.
Well, I guess, you know, like we can blame Fox News and other right wing outlets like that, should they be the only ones responsible for the demeanor of the nation moving in that direction? What about the other side? Is there no other side to actually challenge all of this, or is the right side of our political demeanor just more viscerally involved, and the Democrats are they're just not there. They don't have that same, I don't know, energy and interest. Why are they reluctant to slug it out, political arena? What's the problem here? Why don't we have a real discussion? And where is the White House when it comes to all of this? Why don't we hear more from the White House? Maybe it's not just the White House, or maybe we don't hear enough from New York State.
Because the White House is not a prime time.
No.
Every night.
No, it's not. Correct.
It's not.
Yeah.
Oh.
So then who dropped the ball that we got here? Or is it just the effectiveness of Fox News?
Well, the whole media dropped the ball when they gave Trump all kinds of free media while he was running.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, they didn't think he could win. They thought he was entertainment. But as it turns out, he wants to be a dictator, not a president. And those on the right really don't have a problem with that. They don't see him as being a, you know, an autocrat. And if they do, they don't care. They want to install somebody who is going to be a strong man, who's going to do their bidding on the issues that are important to them, like appointing conservative Supreme Court justices, which he did, overwhelming the court with people that have conflicts of interest, that accept money from conservative groups, and that's what you have now. So that's what they wanted, and that's what they got.
So is there a way to change all of this, or are we just stuck now? There is no way.
We got to play it out. Biden beat him once. Okay?
Yes.
I would prefer there were somebody with a little more zest on the campaign trail, somebody like Gavin Newsom, for example, who, in my opinion, should be the nominee instead of Joe Biden. But that's not going to happen unless Joe Biden decides not to run. And
is it conceivable that the president would consider stepping down and not running again?
I think it's conceivable.
I mean, for the better of the nation.
I think, you know, if we're looking at next March or April when the conventions are, if he's well behind in the polls, in the swing states that he needs to win, he very well may be asked to step down. Now, he doesn't have to. He doesn't have to.
No.
Right? But
no,
he
doesn't
asked.
Have to.
No, he doesn't have to. But the Democratic leaders in the Senate, Chuck Schumer, and Hakeem Jeffries in the House, and former presidents Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, et cetera, may prevail upon him to do what he said he was going to do originally, which is to be a transition president.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done that. He has transitioned from Trump to
non-Trump.
That's true. Right? And he's accomplished quite a bit, frankly, in terms of historical record. He's passed and signed a lot of bipartisan legislation, the CHIPS bill, the infrastructure bill. He's done a lot, but people in the country don't feel he's the kind of leader they want. They want somebody younger, and I don't blame them.
But is it only
82
age?
Years old, anything can happen.
Absolutely.
And that means Kamala Harris gets to be president. And that scares the you-know-what out of most people.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So there you have it.
And what about, would Newsom even consider running against Biden? Or is that what
the outrage? Nobody wants to run against Biden. That's it. That's exactly it.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to run against Biden, and they're all together. They don't want to give him primary. Now that's me. And they have limited time, by the way, to run if they wanted to run, because you got to file in most of these states. There are deadlines, right?
Yes.
And those deadlines are coming up. So the only way after the deadlines pass for these people to run would be for the convention to nominate them over Biden. And that would require Joe Biden to say, I'm done.
Okay. And Newsom, you know, out of respect to the hierarchy that is already in place now, Newsom would never consider challenging Biden,
Nobody will.
Nobody will.
But he's waiting. He's in the wings.
Yes.
So he's poised to run if something happens. And a lot of stuff could happen.
A lot of stuff can happen.
To an 80-year-old who's under constant pressure day to day to keep a schedule that most 50-year-olds would have problems with.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, he's been, I understand he's even flying out to the Middle East. Which is amazing. I'm just blown away by his interest and how far he's gone. It's truly amazing. Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
Absolutely.
But people
I was
don't
blown
appreciate
away.
It. Voters don't appreciate it.
Why don't they? Where's the disconnect? I don't understand. Is there not enough knowledge? Have we been dumbed down by our complacency?
When they go to the store and chicken is up 30%, bacon is up 50%, and gasoline is still close to $4, they blame guy who's in office.
Yeah.
You know, it's the old story about the guy goes to the racetrack. And he loses 10 races in a row, and he goes, that son of a bitch, Roosevelt.
Yeah.
So, that's basically it.
Unbelievable. Well, I guess we can't change human behavior. So how does one change the reality so that people will realize that, Trump is not their answer? Why do they believe he is the answer? Or they just like the clarity and tone of his voice and his demeaning quality, ability to demean others. Is this like a bully? is a verbal
yes,
bully.
Yes, well, he was. He was a bully when he was younger.
Yes.
He was a bully. That's exactly what he was.
And this is
and
acceptable?
And he bullied his way around. That's how he got his way.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
And his father, that's and what his about, father taught him to do. He taught him never to be a loser. Do whatever you have to do to win. And that includes bullying people. He tried to bully Abe Beam when they wanted him to do a project in New York. They wanted to redo the Roosevelt Hotel, and Beam didn't want to give him the money. And he was with his father in Mayor Beam's office, and he got up out of the chair and went over to Beam, put his finger in his face, and said, you have to give us blah, blah, blah. And they Beam turned to his police, you know, people, and said, "Get him out of the room. Take him for a walk." So that's the way he's always been. He's been a liar and a bully.
And why does that reverberate with people who've supported him? What is it? Do they feel also put upon that they don't feel that they have clout and power? And why is that? Why?
Well, because
I don't understand. Not everyone is
they
wealthy.
View him, because they view him as somebody who's going to be upsetting and disturbing the usual. And he promised to drain the swamp, but he did exactly
Which
the opposite.
Hasn't.
The guys that he put in charge of the agencies, they were the swamp. They were bigger swamp people.
Exactly.
And, you know, so...
So why isn't that resonating with the people on the right who support him? What is it that they don't see? Are they blinded to reality as well?
Well, yeah.
Or they're just hoping for all hope that he'll survive, and what will they get out of it? I don't think they'll get anything but a kick in the pants.
Yeah, but they get somebody who's fighting for them, they think.
They think.
Okay. And now I read an interesting article today that said that there was a connection between obesity and support of Donald Trump.
Really?
Yeah, that they found in the study that because he's tremendously overweight, people that were also tremendously overweight tended to support him. Go figure.
That's amazing. Well, I guess I don't support him because I've lost weight. I'm down to 171 pounds. I'm thrilled to pieces. The doctors are just ecstatic what I've done. I used to be 250 pounds when I was younger.
Oh, my God.
Can you?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was a fat slob, so I'm no longer a Trumpite. I can't. I don't fit the model anymore.
Yeah.
Not that I ever was.
My wife and I took off a tremendous amount of weight, too, but we're on medication to do it.
Okay. No, I did it by realizing that I was eating too much. I guess that's because my parents never lived a good life from the old country and in Europe and what they suffered. So they must have fed their kids more than they should have as compensation. But eventually when I got much older, I realized, hey, this is stupid. I'm eating too much, and there's no reason for it. Unbelievable.
No, there isn't.
Yeah, well, so because
well,
I was
good.
Not in a special diet.
Good.
Yeah, 170 for me. I'm 6'1", so that's
oh, wow.
very good.
That's
terrific. Yeah, so I'm thrilled. And a lot of it has to do with my regimen. I walk every day. Rain or shine,
that's important.
Snow or whatever, unless there's ice on the road because I'm afraid of tripping and falling.
Yeah.
But that's about it. So it's the only time I'm not out there. But
that's terrific.
So I got to ask you about the other thing that's like in our face, and that's the Middle East crisis. I'm blown away that the president is actually going to go there. I'm just astounded. By, I don't know that his demeanor is such that it's so stable in support of Israel. I was surprised, and that he's not concerned about any backlash from any place, and I haven't heard any backlash from anybody.
He's doing what he thinks is right.
Yeah,
he's doing what he thinks is right. He was asked about that last night.
In
the,
you
ought to go see
okay.
the 60-minute interview with
forget
the
what
interviewer's name.
I will.
He said,
he said
the Jews have been persecuted for thousands of years just because they're Jewish. He said, and that's not right. That's not what my father taught me, and that's not what I know in my heart is right. And I'm going to do what I have to do. And that's what he said.
That's amazing. It really is amazing. Wow. But you know, with so much politics that goes on, you know, you get pulled here and you get pulled there. There are a lot of countries to submit to, for one reason or another. And just maintaining relationships all over the world. It's very hard to see.
Yeah.
I think that one thing I found, interesting, and maybe that has a lot to do with my age and my parents and where they came from in Europe, taught me history that most people, even my age in America, do not know. And that is that Jews were always regarded as meaningless, but the crisis of today was really born not because of Jews, but was really born by the British, the Germans and the French deciding how the world would be amongst each other, and that's how they set it up. And that is the Middle East, is defined by the British and the French and the Germans to a less extent. But that's who defined this crisis today. And we're living it. And
yes,
it's 75 years later. And most people just don't get it. But that's because they don't have the knowledge. And when I'm gone and other people like me who may have known this will be gone, and then we live a new reality. And that's the problem.
That's true.
So
but,
the president
will give Israel exactly what it needs to fight to get rid of Hamas for good. They're doing what no other fighting force does, which is warning people ahead of time when they're going to come. And unfortunately, children are going to get killed because half the people there are kids in that area.
Right.
And they're going to have to find some way to mitigate that, because that could get world opinion going the other way if they see dead children.
Right.
So that is something that Israelis have to figure out. I'll tell you one thing, though. This should be the end of Benjamin Netanyahu, because he was so divisive and he was so intent on uprooting the democratic institutions like the judiciary that they took their eye off the ball. And these kibbutzim in southern Israel near Gaza were not protected at all.
No, they
there
weren't.
Was no protection, no protection, zero protection, and they were 20 seconds away from Gaza, and Gaza was planning for years to this assault, and they never picked it up. So after this, there's going to be a reckoning in Israel after this is all over.
Oh, yeah, there will have to be. I don't know. Well, I don't know where this is going to go. It just looks like it's just tragic no matter how you cut it.
That's true.
And Israel always did a very poor thing because they never advised people. They never publicized the fact that they were running the desalination plants. They started, and that's how they had water in Gaza.
Yeah.
And so on and so forth. And then also fuel. It was all paid for by Israel. They never said anything about it. And I don't understand why. I don't know. Maybe it's out of respect because they didn't want to undermine people's integrity somehow. I just don't get it. But Israel made a mistake as well. Just simply not living a reality and covering up
well,
a lot
of
facts.
Well, they thought they could live. they thought they could live peacefully with an ideology that was bent on, one, the destruction of Israel, and two, to the killing of Jews.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is outrageous. I don't know how we could have been so blinded to that. But they were blinded in Israel, so the rest of the world listened and they accepted it. And then there's a lot of responsibility that the world is expecting of Israel to be supportive and I guess to adhere to some sort of civility, and yet at the same time, the people that are being fought by the Israelis are the ones that want their death and their destruction. So I don't understand the reality of the world.
Yeah.
What sort of concept?
Well, let it play
out.
Maybe by this time next week, there'll be a little more clarity.
Yeah, probably there will be. There probably will be. And there's always and. There are a lot of powers that be in the Middle East that are threatening that this will become a wider venue for war. And Hamas is trying to open up another front out of Lebanon. So it's very frightening what's going on. And yet nobody said, hey, don't even bother to do that, that it would be inappropriate. And you have to wonder why there's silence from Britain and why there's silence from France and even Germany. You just have to wonder why there's so much silence. I mean, I'm in awe at the integrity of the President of the United States. I am blown away. I really am.
Yep.
I never expected him to take such a forceful conduct. He sent one ship and now he sent another ship. And he's going to actually be there. Unbelievable. Did you ever imagine this would happen? I never did.
No.
It was way beyond my capacity to even consider that this would be a reality. A U.S. president? Unbelievable.
Well, Trump
and nobody else came out like him. You didn't see anything from the French or the British.
No.
They're all trying to win favor, I guess, with the Arab world.
Well, you don't
Amazing.
See anything from the Arabs either. What about Jordan? What about Lebanon? What about
They're
Qatar?
Scared to death.
What about the UAE? What about Saudi Arabia? They're not saying anything. They don't like the Palestinians either. But they don't want Hamas
scared to
in
death.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what they're afraid of. They're afraid of a backlash from the Arab world or from Iran. They're all very, very afraid. And and I understand that they're afraid and why they're afraid.
Yep.
Look, this whole thing may have been jettisoned by the fact that Saudi Arabia was hoping to get a relationship with Israel, and so that they would respect one another. And
I think
Iran was concerned as well, because they were afraid that Israel would be their supportive of Saudi Arabia. God forbid that there would be a confrontation with Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. But the politics of the world has literally collapsed. And because we've been building toward this end, has nothing to do with the state of Israel. It just is a reality. Because the whole world is broken. I don't know how to get it back on course beyond
Neither
my capacity mentally. Wow. So what do we have to look forward to? I have no idea. I don't know if peace has a chance. Yeah, we will. We will. Well, as always, I hope you're taking care of yourself and your family.
I'm doing the best
matters.
I can.
Well, I know you always are. So thank you for your time. I think I've overstepped my time with you, so forgive me.
That's okay. We'll speak to you next week.
Be well. All the best. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Yeah.
Well, there we have it, none other than Michael Edelman, the national and international political analyst and pundit. I think I forgot to say that from the very beginning, but it's unique capacity that he has as a commentator and analyst, because he's able to not only tell you the way it is, but also to rationalize the reality and what it means. So there's a lot to go there. So to be able to, rationalize what's happening and to look at the facts and tell you what they say, and also to pontificate on it, besides giving you the facts, is immeasurable. And very few people have that capacity, which I believe he does. Well, let's look at some other things that you may find of interest. So let me just go to my website. I wanted to read to you my editorial, and that had to do with the crisis in Israel. So bear with me a moment. Okay, this is my editorial. So the title of the article is Hamas's conduct was coddled and tolerated by Israel for too long, by Mihezi Aris. And this is, I posted this yesterday. So Hamas was emboldened to attack Israel because they were for too long coddled by Israel despite their methodical and consistent effort to destroy the Jewish homeland. Their venom and focus to destroy Israel supplanted their interest, supplanted their interest in building a viable societal construct for the Palestinians. And Israel had for too long adopted a policy of accepting Hamas's conduct when instead Israel should have admonished them for their blatant construction when building underground facilities in Gaza that were outwardly claimed to be hospitals or schools, but were not. And it was these outwardly known facilities that were instead camouflaged in name only to be underground facilities that in reality housed ammunition and housing hideouts for Hamas's soldiers. Hamas quickly learned that Israel was reluctant to call out Hamas for their blatant conduct. And so, after many years of Israel's complacency to call Hamas out for its, quote, fake, end quote, definition of buildings and their use, what was seemingly disguised for humanitarian benefit were in reality the various hideouts for a growing arsenal of military equipment intended for an eventual confrontation to undermine Israel. The catalyst for Hamas's assault on Israel, while of their own choosing, whether emboldened by neighboring Arab nations or not, Israel must accept and blame itself for not extolling the quackery of Hamas's conduct in Gaza for many years. The hospitals and schools in Gaza were nothing more than a feigned and deceitful lack of reality and divergence from the truth. Israel's silence eventually brought about the most recent assaults that have caused the death of Israelis and Palestinians alike. Israel must call a spade, appeasing Hamas's conduct on the ground, by not defining it by its reality and intended purpose to harm rather than to be hospitals or school facilities is a failed accommodation contrary to the facts on the ground. Israel did not extol the facts that desalinization facilities that benefited those who resided in Gaza was paid for by Israel. The deceitful quackery was a failed effort of appeasement. The reality that brought about the murder of Jewish babies and seniors riddled by bullets to their death for simply being Jews are atrocities unknown even when compared to wars that were fought throughout the globe. Bigotry has long been known to undermine the other, quote-unquote, no matter who the other, quote-unquote, may be. The task to bring about a road toward resolution, quote-unquote, is one not well known. All mankind has learned over millennia is that, quote, might, end quote, makes right, end quote. It is a failed construct that rarely lasts longer than it takes for the exhausted and vanquished to be eventually resuscitated by a peace to which they do not subscribe. It is intended to strictly fool those who are desperate for the fighting to subside, who believe, quote, exhaustion, end quote, will bring about a different reality. Unfortunately, no matter the people, their faith, nationality, or gender, have yet to create a recipe of accommodation that is devoid of the bias that undermines us all. Perhaps knowing the reality, validated by facts, rather than innocuous and meaningless definitions, we will learn to call a spade, and in so doing, perhaps derail the bias and bigotry that befall all of humanity, no matter how they are and how they are defined. So that is the editorial that I wrote. But what's fascinating, what's really pertinent, and that is that this construct of modern day Middle East was formulated by none other than the powers from the time of World War II. And that was defined by the British, the French, and the Germans. And it was their construct that created and divided the Middle East as it is today, and so on and so forth. And the ramifications of their construct and their definitions of land and people is what caused this to come about. They defined what would be a reality, and we are living that reality now from the time of the 1950s. And it is that burden from the 1950s, from the time of 1948 when Israel was created. So from 1948 to like 1950, it's now 2023, so 75 years later. 75 years later, we are living what they defined as the powers that be in the 1950s. This is where we are living today. We are repeating the shit that happened then, and this is the platform that has been laid out before us, and we are living it whether we realize it or not. And I have to literally thank a very revered individual of Arab descent from Yonkers who had shared this very, very pertinent point with me. And upon hearing it, I recognized that that was a deficiency in my thinking. I had not gone that far to think about it, but I was aware of it, but subliminally had been hidden in my mind. But he, he's probably my age. I don't think, he's probably a little younger than I, maybe by 20 years, but I don't think he's even 60. But probably in his 50s. But the bottom line, he's aware of the history and so on. So thanks to him, this is what I needed to add to the hesitorial that I wrote about it. But all of this is literally based on the construct of European powers that be, that defined what the Middle East would be, in the context of their power and prowess at that time, 75 years ago. Unbelievable. It is mind-boggling that this is the history we are living today, because it was set up for us whether we liked it or not. And hey, I'm not even 75 years of age. I'm 73. But the point is, this was all set up for me. Oh, and then just in case you needed to know, I'm Israeli born and an American citizen as well, but certainly an Israeli first, and because that's where I was born, and so on and so forth. So that's a story about that. Let's look at some other things that you may find of interest. So bear with me a moment. I want to go over and check some other news. One second. Well, the Polish election earthquake. So the question is, what's going to happen next? A second exit poll in Poland has predicted that the governing right-wing populist Law and Justice Party won the most votes in Sunday's election, but will lose its majority in parliament. So if the official result expected on Tuesday confirms the second exit poll prediction, which has a 2% margin of error, it's up to President André Duda, a former Law and Justice Minister of Parliament, to appoint a new prime minister to form a government. So who gets the first shot at forming a government? It seems that it's customary. And President Duda has said he would do this for the president to choose the leader of the largest single party, in this case the Law and Justice Party, to have the first shot at forming a government and securing a vote of confidence in parliament. So, however, the Law and Justice Party appears to have no clear route to forming a government with a majority, while a diverse opposition coalition of Civic Coalition, the Third Way, and the left does not seem able to form a government with a majority. So according to the second exit poll, Law and Justice would win 198 seats, well short of the 231 needed for a majority. Its potential coalition partners are limited as even with the far-right Confederation Party. They would muster only 212. The opposition would count on 248 seats. So if President Duda lets Law and Justice have the first go and it fails, then Parliament gets a second shot at forming a government, which, if the result confirms the exit polls, would give a majority to the opposition coalition. President Duda could also decline to ask the Law and Justice Party to try to form a government given the parliamentary math. So what if nothing is agreed upon? If that second parliamentary attempt fails, then President Duda selects another candidate for prime minister, and if that fails, he can call fresh elections. If all these stages pan out, Poland could be without a government into November and December and or heading towards fresh elections. So what do the opposition parties disagree upon? If the opposition coalition is appointed and confirmed in a vote of confidence, it will not have an easy time. Firstly, it's politically diverse, from the moderate conservatives of the Third Way to some hard left ministers of parliament in the left. For example, both Civic Coalition and the left support liberalization of the rules on abortion. Civic Coalition and the left campaigned to allow women to choose to terminate their pregnancies up to 12 weeks. The Third Way takes a more conservative approach, saying it wants to overturn a 2020 court ruling outlawing abortion in cases of severe fetal defects, which effectively banned all legal pregnancy terminations, but would then put the issue of any further steps to a referendum. Well, the left wants to significantly reduce the influence of the Catholic Church on state institutions, something the Third Way ministers of parliament may be uncomfortable with. The opposition bloc has pledged to restore the dependence of the judiciary and the public media. The European Commission and multiple international bodies say that Law and Justice's reforms have undermined judicial independence and media pluralism. And under Law and Justice, the state media has been transformed into a party of the Law and Justice media. But again, such a change could face opposition from two important actors, President Duda himself and Poland's top court, the Constitutional Tribunal, which is now controlled by judges who are sympathetic to Law and Justice. So both have the power to veto an opposition government's legislation. An opposition coalition would not have the three-fifths majority in parliament required to overturn a presidential veto, so President Duda could make life difficult for them. So that is a problem. And this is very, very interesting. the Polish election is and the expected political earthquake delights Brussels, it seems. The exit polls from Poland's election have bureaucrats grinning like Cheshire cats. After years of estrangement and antagonism, Poland's centrist opposition, the Civic Coalition, has a simple message for Brussels. Quote, "We, the fifth largest country in the European fold, are back." Led by former European Council Chief Donald Tusk, means the European Union believes them. Brussels has been deeply worried about Poland's election. Little was said in public. European Union figures don't want to be seen as interfering in national votes, but behind closed doors, there was a tone of Euro nail-biting. Poland and Hungary have long been viewed as the European Union bad boys, flawed democracy and European Union hostile. They were accused of flouting the bloc's democratic norms. In Poland's case, Brussels withheld billions of euros of funds, pointing at the Polish government taking away women's rights over their own bodies by virtually outlawing abortion, and threatening the independence of the judiciary and freedom and press freedom, too, by taking hold of the state broadcaster. Hungary and Poland also repeatedly stood in the way of agreeing to new European Union-wide measures to tackle migration and implementing ambitious European Union climate goals. So there are only exit polls to go on so far, but Brussels is doubly delighted at the expected outcome, as it seems to buck a trend much feared by the European Union, the apparent renaissance of the Eurosceptic hard right across much of the bloc. And those forces are polling strongly in France, Austria, and Germany. Populists just won the election in Slovakia. Civic Coalition promises to return to the European mainstream, though it won't be easy. The outgoing hardline Conservative Law and Justice Party is expected to retain a big chunk of parliamentary seats, limiting room for maneuver for Poland's new government. Still, when speaking to European Commission Vice President Margaritis Schinas, he was upbeat. He hoped the tensions, quote, haunting, end quote, relations with Poland would now dissipate, describing Warsaw as a core member of the European family. Russia's another reason Brussels is keen to thaw frost relations with Poland. Moscow sees any disunity amongst Ukraine's international backers as playing to its advantage. But Warsaw's tough line against Russia was unlikely to waver whoever won Sunday's election. It's a historic enmity. From that defense perspective, NATO was far more sanguine about Poland's election results than the European Union. It does not want to be drawn into the domestic politics of national governments, but Warsaw has played an increasingly high-profile role in the military alliance since Russia's invasion of Ukraine. NATO's ambassador to the United Nations, Julianne Smith, told us what she observed on visits to Poland was a dedication by the Polish people, not just the Polish government, to continue supporting Ukraine. Quote, "They're right there. They border Ukraine. They feel this war differently than some of the other allies across the alliance. Quote, it's very close to their daily lives. And for that reason, we think we can count on Poland. We feel quite comfortable with counting on them over the long term, irrespective of who might be in power." So even before the outspoken Donald Trump became U.S. president, Washington was deeply frustrated that its European allies didn't spend more on defense. It's delighted Poland spends 3% of its gross domestic product on making itself feel safer. And it's thought unlikely that Civic Coalition will reverse that. In fact, Poland is so worried the war in Ukraine could spill over its borders that it announced plans to invest in enough equipment and personnel to become Europe's strongest army by 2026. Unbelievable. So we'll see where all that goes. Well, let's look at some other issues that are pertinent. Let's look at what's going on in the Middle East. One second. Israel says that 199 hostages in Gaza. One second here. See if I can get to this page. Yeah. Israel says 199 hostages in Gaza as talks are continuing on aid to civilians. So with updates from Prime Minister Rushdie of Great Britain, Abu Alouf in Gaza, and Louise Doucette, and Lucy Williamson, and Nick Beek in southern Israel, Jeremy Bowen, Yolanda Knell, Tom Bateman, Alice Cuddy, and Joel Gunter in Jerusalem, Anita Foster in northern Israel, and Hugo Bachega in southern Lebanon. So this is all happening from media. So one second. So the summary. Israel's military has updated the number of people it believes are being held hostage in Gaza, up from 155 to 199. They were kidnapped when Hamas gunmen infiltrated Israel just over a week ago, killing more than 1,400 people. United Kingdom Minister Rishi Sunak tells the House of Commons that at least 6 British people were among those killed and 10 remain missing. More than 2,700 people in Gaza have been killed in retaliatory strikes by Israel, which is also blocking fuel, water, food, and medical supplies from entering the territory, but that's changing. Now, the United Nations says it is, quote, deep in negotiations, end quote, to get the first aid into Gaza. And thousands of people have been gathering close to the crossing with Egypt in the hope of leaving Gaza. So, but Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Hamas have denied reports of a truce to allow some people out and aid in via the Rafah crossing, which is the crossing into Egyptian-held territory. So, one second. One moment here. Okay. All right, let me just quickly look. Bear with me a second here. Israel has evidently evacuated communities near the Lebanese border amid fears of escalation. It seems that Israel's military is evacuating 28 communities near the northern border with Lebanon because of escalating hostilities with Hezbollah militants. An Israeli civilian and a soldier were killed on Sunday when anti-missiles fired from Lebanon hit one of the villages and a military post. The military said it struck Hezbollah military sites in response. It also accused the group's backer, Iran, of ordering attacks in an effort to distract Israel from the Gaza war. Iran, meanwhile, warned Israel of the risk of a regional conflict if it continued attacking the Palestinian territory in retaliation for the deadly assault by the militant group Hamas earlier this month. Hezbollah is Lebanon's most powerful military force and has long-range rockets at its disposal that could strike deep into Israeli territory. It fought a month-long war with Israel back in 2006. So during a visit to a community coordination center in the northern town of Shlomi on Monday, Israeli government minister Benny Gantz was asked by the BBC whether he thought there would be another war with Hezbollah. And he said, "I hope for them not, but we do all the preparations," he replied. So the IDF announced on Monday morning that it was implementing an emergency plan to evacuate all civilians living up to 1.2 miles from the Lebanese border and put them up in state-funded guest houses. A spokesperson said the evacuation was a precaution to reduce harm to civilians and enable the IDF freedom of action if it is required. However, several border villages are already three-quarters empty or more. Residents told the BBC that families had not waited for the official order, packed up their things, and taken their children south to safety. In many cases, the only people left in the villages now are soldiers and members of local security teams who stayed behind to help them. The communities are so close to the border that you can see the fortified fence built by Israel along it. In some of them, you can also see the Hezbollah observation posts on the other side. At one point on Sunday, there was intense fighting in several different locations along the frontier as the IDF and Hezbollah exchanged fire. Israel reported its first civilian death from a Hezbollah in the current violence. A man in his 40s was killed in an anti-tank missile attack on the border village of Shtula. Later, an Israeli soldier, Lieutenant Amitai Granot, was killed in another missile attack on a military post, Israeli media reported. In a separate exchange, a rocket hit the headquarters of the United Nations Peacekeeping Force in Lebanon, UNIFIL, in the city of Nakura. No one was injured. The IDF said it carried out strikes on Sunday and overnight that targeted Hezbollah military infrastructure. It also reported that 9 rockets were fired from Lebanon into Israeli territory, 5 of which were intercepted, and that it struck the launch sites in response. Last Monday, 3 Israeli soldiers were killed in a confrontation with militants from a Palestinian Islamic Jihad who had crossed over the border from Lebanon, and later that day, at least 3 Hezbollah militants were killed as the IDF attacked sites in Lebanon in response to mortar fire. On Friday, a Reuters news agency cameraman, Issam Abdallah, was killed by shell fire while reporting near the Lebanese village of Alma al-Sha'ab. The IDF said it was investigating Lebanon's claim that Israeli troops fired the shell. The IDF has deployed tens of thousands of additional soldiers along the border in the past week, but Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant told reporters on Sunday that it had, quote, no interest in a war in the north, end quote. Quote, if Hezbollah chooses the path of war, it will pay a very heavy price, very heavy. But if it restrains itself, we will respect that and keep the situation as it is, he added. Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian, Abdollahian, meanwhile said his country had conveyed a message to Israel through its allies that, quote, if they do not cease their atrocities in Gaza, Iran cannot simply remain an observer, quote, unquote. He also warned that if the scope of the war, quote, unquote, expanded, the United States would suffer, quote, significant damages, end quote. The U.S. said it was sending a second aircraft carrier strike group to the eastern Mediterranean Sea on Sunday as part of a, quote, deter hostile actions against Israel or any efforts toward widening this war following Hamas's attack. One second here. All right. Let's look at some other issues. Bear with me a moment. This is very interesting. A landlord has been charged with hate crimes after a Muslim boy was killed in Illinois. A man has been charged with the murder and hate crimes after allegedly stabbing a 6-year-old boy to death because he was Muslim. Yosef Tsuba, 71, is accused of killing Wadea Al-Fayoum and seriously wounding his mother in Plainfield, Illinois. The landlord allegedly targeted the pair, who were his tenants, because of their religion and the ongoing conflict between Hamas and Israel. President Joe Biden said he was sickened, quote unquote, by Saturday's attack. And this horrific act of hate has no place in America and stands against our fundamental values, freedom from fear for how we pray, because we believe in who we are, he said. Hanan Shaheen, 32, was attacked by her landlord, who had a military knife, a military-style knife with a 7-inch blade, and ran to the bathroom to call the police, authorities said. She suffered more than a dozen stab wounds, but is expected to survive. Her son, Wadea, was stabbed more than 24 times in the attack and later died in hospital. This is outrageous. He celebrated his 6th birthday just a few weeks ago. Quote, he loved his family, his friends. He loved soccer. He loved basketball. The executive director of the Chicago Office of the Council on American Islamic Relations, known as CARE, Ahmed Rahab, had said. When officers arrived on the scene about 40 miles southwest of Chicago, they found Mr. Tsuba sat on the ground outside the property with a cut to his face. The victims, who were Palestinian Americans, were found in a bedroom. Mr. Tsuba was taken to hospital for treatment before being questioned by detectives. He was later charged with first-degree murder, attempted first-degree murder, hate crimes, and aggravated battery. While he did not make a statement, detectives said they were able to determine a potential motive. Quote, both victims in this brutal attack were targeted by the suspect due to them being Muslim and the ongoing Middle Eastern conflict involving Hamas and the Israelis, the Will County Sheriff's Office had said. Well, the U.S. Justice Department has also opened a federal hate crimes investigation into the attack. At a news conference on Sunday, CARE said that CAIR said that Wadea was born in the U.S. while his mother, originally from Betunia in the West Bank, came to the country 12 years ago. Wadea paid the price for the atmosphere of hate and otherization and dehumanization that, frankly, I think we are seeing here in the United States, Mr. Rahab had said. The boy's father, Odeh Al-Fayoum, was at the news conference and was in a state of shock, Mr. Rahab said. Neighbors such as Ava Case expressed disbelief at the violent attack. Quote, I don't care about the situation, what the situation was, she said, but don't take it out on somebody that's innocent of life. Others who lived nearby said the pair had moved into the home 4 years ago. Quote, it's sickening. I can't even imagine how anybody could do that to a little child, one neighbor said. It seems that 1,400 people were killed in Israel when Hamas crossed the border into the Gaza Strip to attack civilians and soldiers. In Gaza, nearly 2,700 people have been killed by Israel's bombing. Palestinian authorities say with an estimated 1,000 missing under the rubble. On Sunday, the FBI said it had seen an increase in reported threats in the United States since Hamas launched its attack more than a week ago. Most have been deemed not credible, a senior FBI official said, but both Jewish and Muslim institutions have been targeted. So unbelievable what's going on. One second. Evidently, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has held talks with Prime Minister Netanyahu in Israel. So U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken held talks on Monday, that's today, in Israel with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu over the escalating conflict with Hamas. It's the top U.S. diplomat's second trip to Israel in just a week. And during the meeting, Mr. Blinken received an update on the situation on the ground, the State Department had said. He reaffirmed his support for Israel to defend itself from Hamas and the willingness of the United States to aid the country, the department added. They also discussed U.S. coordination with the United Nations and regional partners to help provide humanitarian aid to civilians. The meeting comes as the humanitarian crisis in Gaza is reaching a critical point with water, food, and medical supplies running low. More than 2,700 Palestinians have been killed and 9,700 wounded in Gaza in Israel's retaliatory strikes since the Hamas attacks. Hamas is a Palestinian militant group which has ruled the Gaza Strip since 2007. It is designated a terrorist organization by the United States and other Western governments and more than 1,400 people were killed in Israel when Hamas militants crossed into Israel from the Gaza Strip to attack civilians and soldiers. At least 30 Americans among the dead, while 13 are still unaccounted for, according to the latest numbers from the United States. The missing are thought to have been abducted by Hamas, and Mr. Blinken discussed with Israeli President Isaac Herzog how they might secure the release of nearly 200 people taken. The United States has chartered a ship and several flights to evacuate Americans out of Israel to safely nearby locations this week, according to U.S. officials. Last week, Mr. Blinken held meetings in Tel Aviv before making several other stops in the region, including to Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates. And during his tour of Arab countries, Mr. Blinken pledged his support for the Israeli government while arguing that Israel must affirm, quote, shared values for human life and human dignity, unquote. Now, President Joe Biden, meanwhile, told CBS News in an interview on Sunday that Hamas should be eliminated. Quote, Israel is going after a group of people who have engaged in barbarism that is as consequential as the Holocaust. And so I think Israel has to respond, he said, while also promising to supply aid to Israel. The president warned, however, that an Israeli occupation of Gaza would be a big mistake, quote unquote, and said there should be a, quote, path to a Palestinian state, end quote. Mr. Biden is also said to be weighing a trip to Israel in the coming days. One second. All right. Bear with me a second here as I move on to some other pages. Bear with me a second. All right. We should be okay here in a minute. All right, let's just look at a different perspective. So let's look at the latest stuff from Germany. Germany's foreign ministry issued a travel warning for the countries and territories involved in the Israel-Hamas war on Sunday. So Palestinian territories and Lebanon on Sunday, amid expectations of an Israeli ground offense into Gaza, and the warning was also issued for the Gaza Strip. So travel to Israel and the Palestinian territories was, quote, strongly discouraged, quote, unquote. The guidance comes after large-scale attacks carried out by the Hamas military group, which is designated a terror group by Germany, the United States, and other nations in Israel last weekend. Around 1,300 Israelis, as well as other foreign nationals, were killed in the attack, and so on and so forth. We've already advised you of that in earlier, in today's earlier broadcast. One second. This is very interesting. An anti-war Russian clergy are facing punishment. It's absurd, but they are. Clergy have been defrocked and fined in court for speaking out against the war in Ukraine as the Russian Orthodox Church brings members into line ideologically. Clergy who left Russia and others who remained, all of them are trying to navigate an increasingly repressive environment inside the Orthodox Church. When Russia invaded Ukraine in February 2022, a priest of the Russian Orthodox Church faced a dilemma: save the community he had been building in the church or risk it all by speaking up. Stay or leave was the question. Pastor Andrei was one of those who publicly condemned the war and decided to flee. He relocated his entire family to neighboring Georgia, where he cannot fulfill his pastoral mission without the approval of other governmental organizations. He chose to speak on the condition of anonymity in order to preserve his final, quote, glimpse of hope, end quote, of again performing his priestly services in Russia someday. Quote, I cannot condemn those who have to make compromises with themselves to retain their place, he said, speaking of clerics who have chosen to stay in Russia. Among those compromises is one particular prayer that the Russian Orthodox Church recommended reading as the Kremlin intensifies its war efforts in Ukraine, amassing troops at the border and mobilizing hundreds of thousands of reservists. Priests would pray, quote, for peace, end quote, during the first month of the conflict, but later they would be asked to pray, quote, for victory instead. Both versions contain lies and propaganda. Some foreigners took up arms against Holy Russia. My mouth could form the words, Russia started the war, not the other way around, Andrei had said. Around 300 clergymen, less than 1% of the entire institution of the Russian Orthodox Church, signed a public letter calling for an end to the fratricidal war in Ukraine. After Moscow's February 24, 2022 invasion of Ukraine, Russian legislators adopted a law making it a crime to, quote, discredit, end quote, the Russian army by voicing anti-war sentiments or information differing from official Russian state rhetoric. Some of the priests who denounced the official stance were stripped of their priesthood and fined by the courts for discrediting the Russian military, while some clergymen confirmed in conversation that they had gotten away with not reading the new version of the prayer. Not everyone was fortunate enough to avoid punishment. Ioan Koval, a priest from Moscow, was defrocked after substituting the word victory, quote, end quote, with the word, quote, end quote. And church authorities whose aim has been to ideologically unite parishioners and clergymen behind the conflict in Ukraine saw this as an act of disobedience. Well, the public penance for the priests seems that public penance is yet another tool church authorities use to crack down on dissent. Priest Ilya Gavrishkiv of Pogorelov Gorodice, a village located around 124 miles from Moscow, publicly apologized for not offering prayers for Russia's Russia's triumph. In a video circulating on Russian Telegram channels, a bishop emerges from behind the altar, greeting parishioners with Garishkiv standing at his side. Quote, first we will be banned from a sacred service. Then we will be stripped from the priesthood. You were Father Ilya. What will become of you now? Ilushka said when he explained his mistake to him. He explained he understood immediately, the bishop says. In response, Gavrishkiv accepts his wrongdoing. Foolishly and out of pride, I read the prayer for peace again and did not read what was required of me, he says in a mild-mannered voice as he stands and stares at the floor. So how does the Russian Orthodox Church view anti-war sentiments? It seems that the Russian Orthodox Church denies such persecution and claimed the priests were dismissed for making political statements. Vashtang Kupshidze, the deputy head of the church's press office, told the Associated Press, quote, clergy who turn themselves from priests into political agitators and persons and participating in the political struggle obviously cease to fulfill their pastoral duty and are subject to canonical bans, end quote. And despite claiming to be political, the Russian Orthodox Church holds in high regard those priests who traveled to boost Russian morale in Ukraine. Russian priests have been appearing on the front lines, blessing Russian soldiers with holy water and icons before battle. Patriarch Kirill, the head of the Russian Orthodox Church, has been a staunch supporter of Russian President Vladimir Putin. In a show of his loyalty to the president, he backed the war campaign against Ukraine from the start, claiming that dying in combat would, quote, wash away all a soldier's sins. The Orthodox Church, which portrays Russian and Ukrainian and Ukrainians as one nation, has accused foreign influences, quote-unquote, of insulting the conflict between them. As Natalia Vasilevich, an expert on the Russian Orthodox Church and coordinator of the human rights group Christians Against War, advised, anti-war clergy see this war as imperialistic, with Russia wanting to choke Ukraine. Patriarch Kirill, on the contrary, views it as Russia's anti-imperialist war against the collective West, which wants to enslave Holy Russia. In an increasingly wary church climate, some with anti-war sentiments have been forced to move underground, away from prying eyes. Pastor Nikolai, who is based in St. Petersburg, advised he was attempting to gently express his pacifist stance and likened the atmosphere within the church to a time when, quote, Christians were persecuted and used secret symbols to identify one another, end quote. While weighing his options, Nikolai said his spiritual father talked him out of going into exile. Quote, who will take your place, end quote, he asked me. Quote, will this person preach about peace as you do or about the war, end quote. In his war resistance effort, Nikolai created a covert telegram chat where participants gather secretly to pray for peace. Quote, it works by word of mouth. You speak carefully and find out that someone doesn't support the war and you become closer, he said, adding that it reminds him of a partisan movement. He describes the secret meetings as a breath of fresh air. After praying for our brothers and sisters in Ukraine, we talk to each other, and that communication saves us. It's an opportunity for us to say what is in our hearts and call things by their name, he said. Nikolai admitted that the existence of such groups could become public knowledge and put him in danger. In that case, the consequences are unpredictable. I will probably have to suffer for my truth. God is with us. I am not afraid. Unbelievable. This is the world. This is the world we live in. And America is unique in that it permits discourse, even if there are people who try to undermine others with vitriol. And that is, my God, that is the reality. Well, that's it for us today. Tomorrow is another day, and we hope you'll consider joining us tomorrow. All the best, and goodbye.